For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for June 18th, 2008. In this edition, we'll talk about risk management with Jim Hytella of the Open Group. Jim is Vice President of Security of the Open Group, and he's leading an effort to develop standards to define risk in information security. Also, we'll talk about secure software development with CertSecurity.com Executive Editor Dennis Fisher. In a moment, we'll talk about risk management with the Open Standards Group, but first, this message.
There's analysts, there's industry experts, and there's the Security Squad. In a monthly podcast series, the writers and editors of CertSecurity.com and Information Security Magazine debate today's hot-button security issues. Everything from the demise of network access control to terrorism to the merits of compliance. No topic is out of bounds. Join the discussion. Download Security Squad and our other great podcast today. Go to searchsecurity.com/podcast. That's searchsecurity.com/podcast.
And we're back. We've heard a lot about governance, risk, and compliance in recent months. Some experts say that measuring the risk part of that equation is not so easy. But folks like Jim Hytella and the Open Standards Group are trying to change all that. Jim is Vice President of Security at the Vendor Consortium, and he's working to develop a risk management framework.
The Open Group has developed all sorts of standards over the years. That's a vendor-neutral standards organization, including many of the Unix standards. More recently, the Open Group is well known for developing something called TOGAF, which is an enterprise IT architecture framework. And in the realm of security, the Security Forum has developed things like DCE, if you go back a ways. More recently, have done some work in authentication standards, APIs, and things.
How do you really develop a standard around risk management? It seems like it's such an ambiguous area.
That's really what led us to start with the, with a taxonomy that sort of defines a set of common terms and definitions. Agree there's quantitative approaches, qualitative approaches, all sorts of different ways to attack analyzing risk in a given enterprise. In terms of kind of looking at coming up with a standard way of analyzing risk, we realized that the basic thing that was lacking right up front was just a common set of terms. What does it mean when I say threat and when somebody from senior management hears threat? Same thing for risk, vulnerability, impact, all of those things. We realize there were a lot of disconnects between the way that management thinks about what is risk and what IT folks mean when they talk about, risk to information or IT assets.
Is that changing? Is that an area where IT security pros are beginning to get in the boardroom, so to speak?
We think it is changing. Certainly if you look at all the security breaches and things, there's more recognition at more senior levels of companies that information risks really have to be kind of understood and the right set of actions taken against them. So
it's, just from having previous conversations with folks about risk management, one thing that comes up time and time again is companies just don't have a very good understanding of what data is most important to them, where their proprietary data is, where their most sensitive data is.
I would agree. They have to, sort of understand what their information assets are, which are the most critical ones, how those critical information assets relate to business processes, before they can decide, how to apply a risk analysis method. So, sure.
So what happens here? When the Open Group Security Forum develops this standard or develops this taxonomy, is this the next level then? Once you understand where your data is, you can use this as sort of a roadmap or a guide?
No, so this is step one of what we see as sort of a three-part standards effort. Step one being the taxonomy, the basic definition of terms related to the area of analyzing risk. The second step will be to produce a second standard. The second phase will be a set of common criteria for risk assessment methodology. So these are the things that the security professionals that are working on this have defined as any given risk assessment methodology ought to have this set of elements in it in order to effectively understand and assess what the risks are. And then the third phase will be, it's likely, it's a little less clear, but it's likely not to be a standard as much as really a guide to using a risk management framework, in a practical environment.
And that will be available when?
Phase two, we believe, will reach standard status probably by late Q3, maybe early Q4. And then the third phase will pick up after that. So you're probably looking at Q1 of...
Are there a lot of risk taxonomies out there right now?
No, they tend to sort of be, appendixes stuck at the back of, NIST publications that define things pretty narrowly inside of just kind of IT security. They define things in sort of narrow IT security terms. One of the things about this risk taxonomy is that it could actually be applied and has been applied to things non-IT. You can analyze risk, other risks inside of an enterprise using this taxonomy and then ultimately using the common criteria for methodologies that we come up with.
How important, in your opinion, is measuring risk within an organization? Are companies doing it effectively right now?
It is very important. And, without doing risk analysis and assessments throughout an organization, it's hard to know, for instance, that your security budget is being spent wisely. So are you remediating and implementing security technologies against things that actually matter? Commenting on whether it's being done effectively now, it seems to me, and I did a risk management training course a while back and looked at a lot of the frameworks, it seems to me that it's been more art than science. And it's not been done particularly well kind of across the industry.
Up next, Dennis Fisher. He's executive editor of CertSecurity.com. And he talked with me about the state of secure software development as part of our Security Squad podcast. In this excerpt, Dennis talks about whether software vendors are doing a better job with secure coding, and whether software vendors will certify their products as secure, and finally, what lays ahead for secure software development. Dennis, you had an interview with Gary McGraw, and he seemed to offer up a positive view of secure software coding.
Yeah, I think so. He said he was optimistic for the most part. And, it's been, 6 or 7 years, I guess, since Microsoft really started talking this up as part of their trustworthy computing initiative, and I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. They get a lot of flack in other areas, but I think they do deserve a lot of credit for bringing this issue into the mainstream and telling developers and enterprises that are developing their own custom applications, look, this is something you need to pay attention to. You can't just leave it until after the fact. You need to follow these secure coding practices, and you'll turn out better applications that'll be more valuable to your customers in the long run. Although Gary was optimistic overall, he said, we've really just touched the tip of the iceberg in the idea of training developers in this. There's still, I think he said his company had trained something like 10,000 developers in secure coding practices over the last X number of years, which is not even the total number of developers that somebody like, JP Morgan would have in-house. So, there's still millions of developers out there that need this kind of training. And it's not happening in the university and college level. It's just not. They're not teaching it. They don't have the time to do it. It's not part of the curriculum yet. I'm not sure if it ever will be, honestly.
Are we ever going to see a seal of approval on products?
That's a great question. There's been a talk about that going back, probably close to 10 years now, for some sort of like UL Labs, Underwriter Laboratory seal of approval for software saying, we guarantee this code is secure. But I think the problem is that there's any number of problems with that. One is that sort of point in time problem that I brought up earlier where, okay, once the code was written at that exact moment, it met this standard. But as soon as it's deployed, it's being customized. It's in an environment with any number of other applications where the interactions are where the problems can crop up. And also, you'll never get people to agree on standards. There's a few efforts like this out there. SANS has one, but I don't think anything like that is ever going to work on a large scale. The software vendors already have sort of a bulletproof shield in their end user license agreements. Those things, you know, indemnify themselves against any kind of, you know, defects or, you know, security or otherwise in their products. So they're not going to be that eager to sign up for some sort of good housekeeping seal of approval when they've already got, you know, nobody, as far as I know, has ever successfully sued, you know, over a EULA. So
What's getting better? What are we able to measure that we can say, oh, it's coding, secure coding is getting, these applications are being coded much more secure these days?
I think there's a couple of sort of rudimentary ways that you can measure it. You know, in Microsoft's case, they go through and measure the number of not just security flaws, but quality bugs as well in each piece of code that they turn out. And periodically, they'll put out reports saying, okay, Windows XP had X percentage fewer bugs than Windows 2000 did, and, you know, Vista in its first year of life had this many fewer bugs than XP did, and the numbers have definitely gone down. I mean, from 2000 to XP was an enormous drop in the number of bugs. So that's one way to do it, but industry-wide, I think it's very difficult to do that. I think it would have to be on a case-by-case basis. I think Oracle does a little bit of this as well, and other companies track it, but they're not public about it. They'll just tell you, you know, we know that we're doing better on this, and you sort of have to take them at their word. But, you know, the software vendors, the big software vendors like Microsoft, Oracle, HP, whoever, aren't necessarily the big problem. I think a lot of it is these custom applications that the enterprises write, the big enterprises have. I mean, we have probably a couple dozen here at TechTarget, you know, a big enterprise like GM or, you know, Sony or somebody like that is going to have thousands of custom applications that God knows how many security problems they have.
Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. You can check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And you can always get the latest security news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.